Well, good morning, TNC family, on this final Sunday in April. I want to jump right in and set up what I want to talk with you about today. I was listening recently to speaker, author, sports podcaster Steve Carter, and he shared a story about speaking to a group of high school students at a venue where there were hundreds of high school-age students. And he starts off by asking them questions, one at a time. And he asked the students, if you agree with the question, just stand up. He says that his first question is an easy question, something like, how many of you like the music of Ariana Grande or Taylor Swift? And he says, close to half the room will stand up. And then he'll say, okay, look around, because you're not alone. In fact, just bump knuckles with someone who shares that opinion with you. And students will find someone, give them knuckles or a high five, and sit down. Next question, how many of you like the music of Drake or Eminem? And close to half the room will stand up, and he'll say, look around, because you're not alone. In fact, just bump knuckles with someone who shares the opinion with you. Next question, how many of you have cracked screens on your smartphone? And students stand up and find someone that shares this reality, gives them knuckles, sit down. And then he asks, how many of your parents are either separated or divorced? And several stand up, find each other, knuckles, sit down. But then this one, how many in this past year have felt overwhelmed by anxiety? And when he asked this question, he said, every student stood up. A test, a relationship, something going on in the home, thoughts about needing to find a future job or getting ready to be on your own. Now, TNC, the truth is, if you're honest, that's probably not all that surprising, because in every survey of not just teenagers, but adults too, Pew Research, Gallup polling, Harris Survey, SurveyMonkey, when asked, are you worried about something, the future, the economy, national security, politics, a job, relationship, health, almost everybody worries. Almost everyone wrestles with anxiety, at least from time to time, sometimes about half the time, and some of us much of the time. We live with anxiety at work or school, around social obligations or family relationships. Sometimes anxiety comes from personal tasks or a lack of monthly income or an upcoming plan or next year's plans or change in living situations. Sometimes anxiety flows from unexpected things. Someone gets sick, something breaks, somebody gets their feelings hurt. And then you have to worry about the future, future income, future relationships, future living situations, my kid's future. And all these worries, especially when they persist, cause stress, fatigue, discouragement, and sometimes anger, resentment, and depression. And so all of these worries are enemies to the peaceful, joy-filled life. T.D. Jakes, who's the Texas bishop, best-selling author, filmmaker, said recently, quote, if I was your enemy and I wanted to render you powerless, I would worry you to death. He went on, and now I'm going to paraphrase. He says, I wouldn't attack your kids or your job, your finances, or your health. I would simply fill you with anxiety. And then let that pervade you like a cancer, which would then end up attacking your kids, your job, your finances, and your health. Which leads me to this, the scriptures, into a passage where King David is wrestling with his enemies, those who are attacking him. And in Psalm 139, he's writing like a journal entry to God, asking for God's help from the forces that are attacking his life. And he says in verse 19, quote, if only you, God, would slay my bloodthirsty enemies. Verse 20, they even speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. In other words, David is saying, it's not just me they're after, they're after you too, God. Verse 22, I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them as my enemies. And then verse 23, where David makes a shift that he makes over and over and over again in his life from describing his outer enemies to looking inward and the anxiety that he is putting on himself. In other words, David's about to take responsibility for his own anxiety. He's not going to put it on the economy or King Saul who's trying to kill him or healthcare premiums or gas prices or border policy or environmental policy. He's not going to put it on anybody but himself. Watch this. Verse 22, I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them as my enemies. So, verse 23, search me. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. And you see the shift, right? Kill them, slay them, send them away. They're awful, they're overwhelming, they're stressing me out. I'm upset at all these external enemies. So, search me. Know my heart. Test my anxious thoughts. Because David says, it's not what happens out there that makes me anxious. It's what I allow in here, what I allow to happen inside of me that goes undetected and unattended to. This is actually something that the Apostle Paul says, something very similar in Philippians chapter 4, starting in verse 6. He says, don't be anxious about anything, but rather in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends understanding, will change your external circumstances. No. The peace of God will guard your interior, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. He's saying what David says, which is anxiety is an internal issue. This is why David says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Verse 24, see if there's any offensive way in me and lead me to the way everlasting. He says, examine me and show me what's going on in me that's hurting myself, that's making me vulnerable, that's allowing me to be anxious. Which leads me to this, what I want to do here right now. For a few minutes now, I want to search with you for anxiety's source, recognizing that anxiety is rooted more in things within my control rather than things outside my control. And so I want to explore with you now five reasons we get anxious. And alongside that, five moves to help us avoid and overcome the anxiety. And here's number one. First, I get anxious because I am invaded. I get anxious because I am invaded with noise. Simply put, how do I not get filled with anxiety when I'm constantly hearing noises like this? You need to do this. You need to investigate that. You should get more sleep. You should wake up earlier. You need to save more money. Devote better focus to work. Spend more time with your kids. Take more time for yourself. Exercise. Eat better. Vote this way. Pay attention to that warning. Oh, and you've got to watch this clip. Noise. And every day, on average, you spend about 5 hours paying attention to the noise of news, entertainment, podcasts, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, TV, talk radio, TikTok, noise primarily designed to evoke an emotional reaction in you. Otherwise, you wouldn't come back. So the noise is designed to make you excited, interested, nervous, anxious. Noise. Now let's broaden the scope. It's not just noise from media or family members or friends. In the 21st century, artificial noise surrounds us unlike any other era in human history. Engines rumbling, heaters blowing, white noise, fans turning. We wake up to the sounds of alarms and music and coffee percolating and refrigerators humming and offices and restaurants and shopping venues. They all have music playing over speakers in the background. And don't get me wrong, it's not that noise is bad. I just think it's fascinating to observe that our planet was once a more quiet place. And its quiet was broken only occasionally. Yes, cats meowed, dogs barked, birds sang, thunder clapped, volcanoes erupted, but, in the words of Princeton theologian Dale Allison, these are punctuation marks, not sentences. What percentage of a lion's day is spent roaring, he asks. And then he says this, quote, perhaps we have finally done away with God indirectly by exterminating silence. And I'm just saying, TNC, what if something as simple as noise produces more anxiety than we think? And what if something as simple as silence could be a key for navigating or overcoming our anxiety? I love the story in Acts chapter 20 where Luke tells us that Paul and his friends are about to set sail from Troas and head to their next stop. But instead of getting in the boat, Paul says, hey, you guys go ahead. I want to walk. I'll see you when I get there. And it's a total trip by foot of about 25 miles, but Paul wants to be alone to experience the solitude of walking the countryside and talking with God. A pattern, it turns out, for Paul, after Damascus and before Jerusalem and while in Rome, over and over and over, you see Paul believes strongly that there's this link between silence and wisdom, quietness and calmness, stillness and joy. And it's not just Paul who advocates silence. Of course, Jesus did over and over and over. And actually, most of the world's religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, all overwhelmingly advise that faith without quiet is dead. Because silence is this opportunity, first just an opportunity to not be filled with anxiety-producing noise, but second, an opportunity to be filled with a divine presence, a presence that can center your spirit and fill you with a new freedom to re-engage with people. Because I get anxious when I'm invaded with noise. And so we would all benefit if we reduce the noise and increase the quiet in our lives, which could mean real simple things like just taking quiet car rides as we commute to work, or long meandering walks like Paul, or just sitting still, taking in deep breaths on back porch rocking chairs. Because the kind of thoughts and peace and centering and perspective that could take place there would, I believe, reduce the anxiety in our lives. Search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there are any anxious ways in me and lead me to times, daily, weekly, monthly, seasonally, where I can get away from the anxiety-producing noise and find the way everlasting, the sustainable, long-term joy. Because I get anxious when I'm invaded with noise. Number two, I get anxious because I'm ill-prepared. Now, this one's pretty obvious because you will be less anxious if you are more prepared. I mean, the student most anxious about that test is the one least prepared. And the employee most anxious about that presentation is the one least prepared. And the car owner most stressed about the flat tire is the one who hasn't prepared for the inevitable flat tire by having emergency savings already secured. And I could go on and on, but you get the idea. I get anxious because I'm ill prepared. a point embedded, by the way, in the great story of David and Goliath, where all of the Israelites are anxious about facing the giant Goliath, except for David. And here I'll just highly recommend Malcolm Gladwell's book called David and Goliath, because David is the opposite of anxiety-filled, and it's because he's prepared. He's already a skilled slinger, a marksman with a history of deadly accuracy, who before going into battle against Goliath, read the text, prepares by choosing wisely his clothing, the stones he'll use in the sling, the distance he'll stay from the enemy, and even the high ground from which he'll release the stone. Now, imagine taking away all that preparation. And if you do, you'll see David not only filled with anxiety, but headed for defeat. I mean, I'm watching probably way too much NBA playoff basketball right now, and I'm always fascinated with what goes on in the huddles during the timeouts. Because the coach has a clipboard with a marker in his hand, and I'm pretty sure he's talking about a plan. I mean, I don't imagine he's saying, all right, guys, huddle up. No plan. On three. Break. That's a setup for defeat. I'm saying, TNC, if you say, I want to be physically healthy and fit, but you have no plan, it is guaranteed to result in an anxiety-riddled failure. If you want to save and not live in debt, but you have no plan, it is guaranteed to result in an anxiety-riddled failure. If there's a relationship you want to improve, I hope you will say to the person you want a stronger relationship, hey, what's our plan? I'm talking about putting pen to paper, fingers to cell phone notes. How specifically will you get there? Because just the act of getting a plan will reduce your anxiety tenfold. This is why the prophet Isaiah writes in his letter, chapter 32, verse 8, quote, the one who is noble plans noble things, and on those noble things he stands. He's talking about the power of preparation. He's saying that the person with a noble future prepares for it. And this preparation creates a platform on which your life will stand. Search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there are anxious ways in me, and lead me to prepare so that I can get away from the anxiety-producing ways of the ill-prepared, because I get anxious when I'm ill-prepared. First, I get anxious when I'm invaded with noise. Second, I get anxious when I'm ill-prepared. Number three, I get anxious because I'm indecisive. I get anxious because I'm indecisive. I don't know. Should I or shouldn't I? Do that this weekend. Forgive that person. Sign up for that class. Accept that invitation. I was talking to a friend a couple months ago who was in the valley of decision between two car models. Their current car was breaking down, and so they were researching a new vehicle. And I thought at the time, several months ago, when they were talking with me, I thought, hey, you've done your homework, you've prepared, and I think either choice, either model is good. There is no bad choice here. But then 2 weeks ago, we met again, and they were still struggling over the same decision. And I was like, choose, just decide. Your anxiety is coming from your indecision. And so often what's between you and the less anxious life is simply a choice. Should I throw that old t-shirt away or not? Doesn't matter, just choose. Should I go to bed early? Sure. Should I go into debt? No. Should I forgive? Yes. Should I bail on my commitment? No. Should I vacation in June or July? Probably doesn't matter. Take a day or two to investigate, talk to some friends, then choose. Should I stay in this dating relationship or leave? Stay and double down on prayer and service and kindness. Or leave and double down on growing into the kind of person better fit for the next relationship. But don't evaluate and reevaluate and evaluate and reevaluate and stress over should I stay or should I go. Choose. When I think about indecision, I always remember the words of Erwin McManus in his book, The Barbarian Way Out of Civilization, where he says that the people of God need to stop waiting for the open door and run toward the closed door. And if it doesn't open up by the time you get there, you'll know. And then run towards a different door. Search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there are anxious ways in me, and lead me away from indecision so that I can get away from its anxiety-producing ways. Because I get anxious when I'm indecisive. First, I get anxious when I'm invaded with noise. Second, I get anxious when I'm ill-prepared. Third, I get anxious when I'm indecisive. Number four, I get anxious because I'm too isolated. I get anxious because I'm isolated. I go it alone. I face it alone. And things are almost always harder alone. Lifting that, learning that, overcoming that. That itch in the middle of your back. The high five. And there are some words that are simply not possible alone. Accountability, encouragement, support, love, teamwork, service, kindness. You simply can't experience the depth of those words alone. Which is why one anecdote to worry and anxiety is simply don't go it alone. And here I think of Jesus' words in Matthew chapter 6. Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Now, too often we focus on the seeking righteousness part, and we miss out on the seek first his kingdom part of the counsel. But Jesus says if you don't want to live in anxiety, seek first God's kingdom. And you do know that a kingdom is not one, correct? Think about the animal kingdom. It has more than just one lion. And the magic kingdom has more than just Mickey Mouse. And at the heart of the kingdom of God is the reality that you and I are not designed to experience life alone. It's actually one of the most beautiful things about our church community to me. It's the fact that we are a community. We're not going through life alone. It's why we have all kinds of groups that meet throughout the week. Men's group, women's group, restaurant trivia groups, fantasy sports groups, gardening, hiking, serving groups, and on, because we get anxious when we are too isolated. Search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there are anxious ways in me, ways I try to go it alone, so that I can embrace the way everlasting, the kingdom. Because I get anxious when I'm isolated. First, I get anxious when I'm invaded with noise. Second, I get anxious when I'm ill-prepared. Third, I get anxious when I'm indecisive. Fourth, I get anxious when I'm isolated. And finally, number five, I get anxious because I'm insecure about what I already have and who I already am. And let me explain this point by first quoting Barbara Brown Taylor in her book, An Altar in the World, A Geography of Faith. Listen carefully. She says, quote, "No one longs for what she or he already has. And yet, the accumulated insight of those wise about life suggests that the reason so many of us cannot see the red X that marks the spot is because we're standing on it. The treasure we seek requires no lengthy expedition," she says, "no expensive equipment, no superior aptitude or special company. All we lack is the willingness to imagine that we already have everything we need. The only thing missing is our consent to be where we are." I love that. Which leads me actually to two other authors I've been reading recently. First, social scientist and Harvard professor Arthur Brooks, in his bestseller From Strength to Strength, where in chapter 4 he writes about the insecurity and anxiety we feel when we always look to who we are not yet and what we have not experienced yet. He says, quote, "The happiness strategy of getting and owning and doing more and more and more has a name, the bucket list. But chasing a bucket list is a way to find meaning, happiness, identity, satisfaction, and completeness is a lie." He goes on. First, he says, it's always a problem when you define your life or yourself by who you are not yet and what you have yet to do. Second, he says, if you just even Google bucket list, you'll get like 800 million hits. And the things on there are idiotic, like the 7th most listed item for happiness is a hot air balloon ride, which there is no empirical link to that experience and happiness. Instead, he says, the best thing to do is to create a reverse bucket list. He says, if you really want to be satisfied, the formula for satisfaction is not getting what you want, it's wanting what you have. And so you don't want a strategy to get or experience what you don't have. You need a strategy to want and experience what you already have. And now listen to the words of Kate Bowler, professor of history at Duke University's Divinity School, in her newest book called No Cure for Being Human. She says the idea of the bucket list captures the stirring of our curiosity and wanderlust, devotion and enterprise, but the problem with aspirational lists like this is that they often skip the point entirely. Instead of helping us grapple with our finitude, they fill us with a false sense that life can be completed. Just need to go hang gliding, snorkeling, to Times Square on New Year's Eve and Paris in the spring. It's easier to count items than to know what counts, she says. And so we end up feeling like we just need one more adventure, one more experience to be complete, which of course always leads to just one more, and so the cycle of dissatisfaction and insecurity. And Jesus comes into this equation and he says, you already are complete because you're my child, because I'm with you always, because my grace is sufficient, because, John chapter 14, I have prepared a place for you. And if I've prepared a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also for all eternity. And so, TNC, we get anxious because we spend too much time looking somewhere we are not, which makes us anxious and insecure about what I already have and who I already am. And I guess if you're going to look somewhere else, maybe there's one place. At least Jesus says there's another place. He says, look at the lilies of the field, how they grow. They don't work or make their clothing, yet Solomon in all his glory was not dressed as beautifully as they are. Verse 30, and if God cares so wonderfully for wildflowers that are here today and thrown into the fire tomorrow, he will certainly care for you. So TNC, first I get anxious when I'm invaded with noise. So let's get quiet. Second, I get anxious when I'm ill-prepared. So let's get a plan. Third, I get anxious when I'm indecisive. So let's choose. Fourth, I get anxious when I'm isolated. So let's join. And fifth, I get anxious because I get insecure about what I've already done or who I already am. So let's look to the wildflowers. Let's pray. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Amen.